Okay, as an old hippy-dippy myself who's ended up with a career, I'm interested in others of my generation who have done the same, especially when their careers are unusual and something edible is involved. Michael McConkey and his wife Jeannie live in Afton and have, since 1979, made their living propagating and selling edible landscaping plants.
Edible landscaping is an idea where more plants that are grown in the yard are dual purpose, ornamental but edible. And they don't take a lot of care, so we're not attempting to be professional growers in our yard where we're spraying, you know, not all that stuff. So we look for plants that are user-friendly.
How did this idea come about?
I think it was the 70s and the back to the land movement.
Were you part of that?
Yeah.
Yeah? Where were you?
A couple of places. I traveled around. I was mostly in Stratford, Ontario for about 5 years. I was from Washington, suburbs, Adelphi, near University of Maryland. And kind of right after Woodstock, a bunch of us went up to Canada and we kind of stayed. And we fell into a coffee house and there was local farm young people and they grew things. So I came from a family that never had fresh peas. You know, it's like meat and potatoes kind of thing. And we had these huge meals, 30, 40, 50 people at the coffee house, and it was a dollar. And so it was easy to eat a lot of good fresh food. And I think it hit something. I was always a nature buff, and I think the gardening bug kind of started then. But I had some gardening experience, I guess. When I was like a little kid, my mom said, have that hillside, which was a eroded hillside, you know, and I went down the woods and I got these dainty little flowers, you know. So I was into gardening even when I was little. I had a zoo, I had lizards and pets, and I charged admission with lemonade and that kind of
thing. Was this in suburbia?
Adelphi, okay. Yeah, which is College Park, really close to the University of Maryland. That's where I met Jeannie, my wife. I was at a health food store when I met her. I was doing produce, and she came in for
produce?
For produce.
And a husband?
Yeah.
You're in Canada, and then what happens?
I was in like the San Francisco of the East Coast in Canada, and it was a really great bunch of singer-songwriters. There was six of us, and we all performed, and we were called the Perth County Conspiracy Does Not Exist. But I wasn't into drugs, believe it or not. I mean, everybody else seemed to be at that time, and I kind of didn't like it. I actually spent a couple of winters traveling to Mexico and Belize and places like that. And that opened up the next kind of chapter in my life because I was in a flood in the Punta Gorda area of Belize. And it took me about 9 days to get back to Belize City. And at that time, I stayed with a lot of native people in palm-thatched huts and families of eight kids and a grandmother. They all lived in this little room and they just loved each other. So I had a big awakening down there that you didn't have to have a lot of money to have a lot of love. And it was a great experience. So I went back to D.C. or that area and I visited Glen Echo and Bonnie Raitt's brother had built some yurts. And I went, ooh, I can build one of those.
Now, why'd you go back to Glen Echo?
I was down in Belize, but, yeah. You know, with the flood and everything, it was for wintertime. And I would go back up to Canada and sing at the coffee house, and it was called the Black Swan. We'd sing in the summer and things like that. But little by little, I found myself back to where Mom and Pop lived and my brothers. And
so you're living in Bonnie Raitt's
Bonnie Raitt's brother. No, he built Glen Echo, which was an amusement park at one time, and now they do contra dancing there and things like that. So it's still kind of a public place. But Bonnie Raitt's brother had made these yurts, and yurts were really cool. And my dad had a construction company, and he had this under-the-porch kind of throwaway stuff, and I pulled all kinds of things out and made a yurt out of just recycled materials and didn't cost me much, and my brother had a backyard that was long, and he said, go ahead, you can put your little yurt down there, or you can live here if you want. After I got the yurt built, which was probably 1976, then I met Jeannie, and she lived in the yurt with me for about a year. I was in the yurt for about 10 years, but I met Jeannie toward the end, and I planted everything edible for 10 years, and I became a North American fruit explorer. And there was a bunch of old guys who had this love for fruit growing. And they took me under their wing. And I traveled all around. And I found out about hardy kiwis. And I found out about all kinds of plants. Like most of us, when we think, oh, I'm going to put some edibles in my yard, well, they think apricots, cherries, peaches, plums, you know, the regular fare that are very challenging to grow. So I started growing everything edible in the world. I had pen pals in Japan and all over the country. I would visit fruit breeders in like New Hampshire, and I'd go to the Geneva Cornell fruit days they had in the fall. And
now, where did all this come from?
One thing just led to another. I was so sanguine that when I got stimulated, it just kept rolling.
Homegrown's all right with me. Homegrown is the way it should be. Homegrown is a good thing. Plant that bell and let it ring.
When I was up in Rochester, New Hampshire, in the summer, I was visiting Dr. Meter. He looked like the guy on the Quaker Oats package. You know, he had this nice beard, no mustache, and a big, round, jolly face. And he was Quaker. And he was a fruit breeder. And I went to visit him because I was in Boston at a natural hygiene convention. And so I took a bus up to his place, and I spent the weekend with him. And he was very sweet. How much corn do you eat? And I would be sitting at his table, and I didn't know how to answer him. He'd say, I always eat a yard of corn. He was great. So, but he had this hardy kiwi, and he said, I'm getting older now. Would you propagate this and maybe send it out to people that want it when they come and visit? Because I was pretty astounded. See that little kiwi right there? Pop one in your mouth.
Right here?
Yeah, that's the Myers cordifolia.
Let's describe this. This looks like sort of a very tiny wrinkled green tomato.
And it's kind of wrinkled because it's actually sweeter when they're wrinkled.
All right, I'm eating it.
You probably won't find them wrinkled in the stores.
Oh, man. What is that?
That's the hardy kiwi.
And it is like the perfect kiwi taste.
Yeah, it has a lot more complex flavor, I think, than even the store-bought kiwi. Dr. Meter asked me to propagate some of those plants.
Mm-hmm.
So I went home with 25 cuttings, stuck them in the ground, and they actually rooted. Then National Gardening Magazine had his picture on the front cover holding a hardy kiwi and smiling. And at the end it said, well, if you want any kiwis, contact Michael McConkie. And he had never told me that he'd do that.
And you're in business.
I actually got $14,000 worth of orders in my brother's mailbox, and I had 25 plants. So I decided I was in business. And
were they ordering fruit or were they ordering?
They were ordering the plants.
The plants.
And I decided I would have to go find more cuttings to fill the orders. And I would put the plants in pots so I could send them when they were ready. Most companies at that time just sent bare root. So I said, I'm going to put them in pots.
Were you still in your brother's backyard?
Yes. And I was, and we were going to Virginia. And we were going to have our first child, Gabriel, and we were renting a house. We were house sitting, and then they
in
came
Virginia.
Back. It was all crazy. It was chaos.
I'm getting confused.
Yeah, well, because it was chaos. It was a time of chaos, but it all worked.
And so you originally went to Virginia to house sit.
Yeah, we wanted. Jeannie didn't want to have a baby in Washington, D.C. She was a Waldorf teacher. She had been working at Acorn Hill in Silver Spring, and there was a Waldorf school in Charlottesville. So we moved to, we thought we'd move to Shannon, the intentional community,
yes.
Since we had $35 and we couldn't buy much with that. Shannon Farm was just a collective of, you know, there's probably 60 families there.
Okay.
Now. Originally, it was a 700-acre plot where Edward Coles owned, and he was James Madison's secretary, and he was the first Virginian to free his slaves. He had 19 slaves that lived at our house.
Your plan was to live at Shannon?
At first, but then I needed a greenhouse because I'd promised people all these.
Yes, these $18,000 worth of order,
$14,000. And then Gurney's called and Stark Brothers called all these companies, and they wanted me to sell them kiwis too, wholesale. So it all led me to a guy that had a greenhouse that he wasn't using anymore in Waynesboro, and he was Mennonite. And him and his young family were going to go to Bangladesh for relief work for 3 years. And he had a greenhouse, and we could rent his house, buy the greenhouse, have it moved before he got back, and we could start our nursery there. And that's what I did.
So you were living in Waynesboro?
Yeah, kind of near Stump's Junkyard out in the rural section of Waynesboro, yeah.
So you started pretty much with the Hardy Kiwi.
Yeah.
So, and it was a sort of an accidental business.
Yes.
And then what happened?
So I did do the little bit of business, but I always wanted my own retail catalog. So I hand wrote a catalog, and I had some hand-drawn pictures that a friend of mine named Cher Bell, he would draw these really beautiful dot pictures of all these different fruits. And he was a good friend. So we had a little catalog, and I stopped being wholesale because I wasn't really cut out for it, and I didn't have the room or anything like that. I didn't really know a lot about propagation either. You know, I was kind of the first nurseryman of the family. I really like a persimmon that's incredibly hardy, and we got it from Russia, a great Russian horticulturalist, Murchurin, and he introduced a cross between the Japanese and the native persimmon, which was the first successful hybrid because they were very hard to hybridize. And this plant is called Rosianka, and it has...
I like that name.
And it has fruit about the size of that big American persimmon, so maybe 2 inches or so. But they are seedless, and when they ripen, they're like apricots. They just have a really great flavor. And they hang on the tree almost all winter, which...
What's your work day like? Are you working...
Well, the website, I update all the time, and we run out of plants, we add plants, so I do that all the time. I take all the pictures, so the pictures go up with it in new varieties, things like that. And then the phone's ringing, and we talk to people. So we get a lot of questions.
Do you have help with all the plants?
Yeah, there's about 10 of us.
You guys are still very 70s, aren't you? Very 60s. Well, I always describe myself as an old hippie, I think.
Yeah, I mean, just because we were born in that time, and I guess... The whole idea of the edible landscaping was kind of like, we did a lot of things in the 70s that are still prevalent in society, even as basic as jeans, you know. So maybe so in that sense, yes. And then I do think that it's a statement of people being more in harmony with their surroundings. Yeah, because if you walk in our orchard, just take a nice little walk, you know, at sunset or something, and you're going from tree to tree and you're finding things to eat and you're nibbling and all that. It almost feels like, wow, you could just keep walking and maybe one day, you know, 800 years from now, every people's space might be kind of in that way. It just evolved that way where there's more food and it's plentiful.
This is a song called Woodstock and has a chorus that goes, we are stardust. We are golden, and we got to get ourselves back to the garden.
Edible Landscaping is now on its own Afton acreage. Many thanks to Robin Lukey for suggesting I talk with Michael for The Spark. There's a link to the Edible Landscaping website on the Spark page at WMRA.org.